Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa, and we're talking with the people who are growing, raising, harvesting, and producing food here in our bountiful coastal region.
And also to those who are selling, cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us today in a conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast.
Today we are talking with Karen Matthews of the Lower Nehalem Community Trust, and she is from Wheeler. Welcome, Karen.
Hi, thank Karen. You. It's great to have you up here.
So, you know, we always start our show off trying to ask our guests how they ended up here on the North Coast, and I was wondering if you could tell us, have you always been here?
No, but I am a lifelong Oregonian, fifth generation, actually,
wow.
Which is kind of cool. Raised in the Eugene area and then moved to the Portland area in the early 70s and lived there for quite a few years, raised my family, and then I moved full-time to the Oregon coast in Wheeler in 2005.
Well, and I always love here at the coast how everybody has this little bit of a backstory. So we were talking a little earlier, and you were in the town of North Plains.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And you were involved with high tech.
I was. I worked in high tech for over 25 years in various positions, starting at Tektronix and then in some of the spinoff corporations, and did a variety of different jobs. So I had an engineering hat for a period of time, and worked in sales and marketing and purchasing management and logistics. And
actually, what I thought was really awesome is we were talking a little bit early before we started recording, and Karen's telling us about all of her high-tech background, but then also talking about, you know, living in North Plains and raising your family there and having, you know, this small acreage and growing all of this food and canning and drying and doing all this stuff. And to me, those are very incongruous things together. So you actually had a lot of background, you know, on a small acreage growing food and getting involved, you know, being interested in that. And you were talking about how many tomatoes you canned and feeding your son's spaghetti sauce. And, you know, tell us a little about how did you start doing that? Where did you learn how to grow food?
Well, you know, growing food is really an ancient art, and I think a lot of us learn it from our family. You know, mm-hmm. It was passed up through my family. My grandfather gardened, my father gardened and still does garden.
Yeah.
And as a child, we always had a backyard vegetable garden. It was rather small. And, of course, I got delegated to the weed business, which was never my favorite. So
it's actually impressive that you're still gardening, because I think that really turns a lot of people off to gardening.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, I have to think about it, and it was really a smarter way to weed, because they would hand us kids a paring knife and send us out to the lawn, and we would take all the dandelions out. They didn't have Weed and Feed and all those things then.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
You
no.
know?
You were organic gardening back then.
Exactly. By default. Yeah. So, but the vegetable garden always had, you know, an interest to me because, of course, there's something to eat there. So that was fun. And when I was in my early 20s, I rented a house, and the owner didn't allow gardening. So it was very early in the city of Portland community gardens. And so I got one of the very first community gardens.
Oh, that's
it was
so
out
great.
On Powell. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was really cool. And so I had this 10 by 10 plot, and there was an old guy, he was probably 60.
Yeah. It's all about perspective. All about perspective.
And so he just couldn't figure out why I wasn't over there gardening all the time. Well, I had to work. I had hobbies. I was 20-something, you know? But I got involved then somewhat, and then kind of took a hiatus for a while. And then when I had my family and kids in North Plains and we moved out there and had an acre and a third, we moved into a pretty much already made gentleman's farm. It was fantastic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I know Karen. I met Karen through her work through the Lower Nehalem Community Trust, and she manages this amazing demonstration garden that they have down there. And I know that you do a lot of other things, not just that. You're a master gardener with Tillamook County Master Gardeners, and you're also in the Wheeler Parks Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to talk about all of those things. But just give us a little bit of background about the Lower Nehalem Community Trust Garden, because it's a very impressive operation. And if anybody hasn't seen it, I really recommend going down and taking a visit.
Sure. Well, the garden is only there because the trust is there. And so really to start with the bigger picture, Lower Nehalem Community Trust is a wonderful organization that has set aside land in perpetuity to, you know, protect and sustain species, the land, protect the land for various species. And the human element of that is the garden.
Yeah.
So the big picture of the trust, there's over 105 acres. There's
there's multiple properties that they own.
Yeah, multiple properties all around the Nehalem Bay. And it has corporate as well as individual sponsors and members and people who volunteer. Almost 200 people each year volunteer in some aspect or another.
Yeah,
a lot of restoration work, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the garden portion of it is about 5 acres, and it is in
the
Nehalem, Alder Creek Farm, yes, on Underhill Lane.
Yeah.
And that 5 acres, part of it's fenced. There's over an acre that's fenced. We have a resident elk herd that would love to munch on all of our vegetables.
I bet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the program really has grown over the years. The trust started in 2002. We have been gardening. There was a very small permaculture demonstration garden that was there before I was involved, and an old orchard that has been revitalized and since planted out quite quite heavily, and we have grown over the years. I took my Master Gardener training in 2005, and then as part of my payback program, started working at with the Land Trust, volunteering. And we've grown from a garden that was pretty small, a row garden, to one now that is encompasses that entire fenced area. And we have 35 volunteers.
Wow.
Yeah, who come every week.
And it's actually a really cool program. So the volunteers sign up for this, and they commit to a certain amount of time in that garden, right? You were talking about people, it's 2 hours a week that they're committing to.
Yeah, it's actually a membership base. I mentioned there's lots of volunteer opportunities with the trust. The garden program is one that is a membership-based volunteer program, and all of the volunteers do commit to a minimum of 2 hours. Sometimes it's 3 or 4 hours in a week, depending upon what's going on. If we're putting the garden to bed or getting started in the season or when we have a plant sale, that sort of thing, we have to put in a few extra hours.
So it's sort of like a community garden then?
It is. You know, I think a lot of people, when they think about a traditional community garden, and like I had mentioned, when I had my first community garden, you get assigned a plot.
Right.
Mine was 10 by 10. And of course, they come in all shapes and sizes based on the program.
Yeah, sure.
But this is more of a collaborative, collective garden where we all garden together. So we decide what we want to plant. We learn from the previous year. We all garden together. For one, the major purpose is for education, because my job as a Master Garden volunteer is to go out and disseminate the information that I've learned through that training through Oregon State University and share that with various people, whether it's my neighbors or people in this garden or the people at the park. And then I have some other affiliations that I do that, you know, I go out and help teach people how to garden. So really focusing on that education, the best way to do that, in my opinion, in a community garden is to garden together. Because I know only so much, and then the next guy who's been gardening, or hasn't been gardening, but may have a different observation, we can all learn from each other.
Yeah. So are you often all out there in the garden, or it's usually two or three at once, or How do you kind of structure that?
Well, Tuesdays is our main garden day, and I do a formal education program that day. It's likened to the OSU Master Gardener 10-Minute University, kind of on that same scale, where you pick a topic, it's focused, you talk about that particular element. This year, for instance, we started at the end of February, and our very first one, guess what it was? Seed starting.
Yeah.
Tis the season.
Yeah,
we were talking about that, you
know.
So I did a session on seed starting. That one was a little longer than 10 minutes. And I say it's like the 10-minute university. It's usually about 20 minutes, although I try to get them out in the garden with their tools and getting to work. But we had one on pruning caneberries, compost, soil amendments, pH, soil sampling and pH testing, those kinds of things. So,
and you do work with the school system down there too, don't you? Do you have school kids that come to the garden?
School kids do come to the garden. They come through a couple of different programs. We've got the school system, then we also have North Coast Recreation District. They have a summer camp, and the kids come for that camp usually just a couple times or sometimes only once, but we do try to put together some sort of a garden education program. And last year it was really fun. It just kind of happened. It all flowed together in that I had gotten donated some wonderful spools, those great big metal spools that the fiber optic cable comes on.
That you make tables out of and things that size.
This is huge. This is like 12.
Well, yeah, maybe it is.
10 feet?
10 feet. 10 feet diameter.
Huge.
It's huge.
Really big. Really big. I mean, in fact, when we put it on a trailer and brought it from Tillabook, my husband said, "You want to do what?" It was pretty comical. But we drove it home. I cut it in half with a metal saw, because it's a big metal spoke, flipped it on its edge, and we made a pizza garden for the kids.
Oh, how fun.
It was so cool because it has the spokes of a pizza. And so we talked about, well, what kinds of veggies go on a pizza? And of course, you know, some of the things don't grow that well here, like green peppers, but you know.
Yeah.
But we did plant them all, and it was actually a good tomato year this year, or last year, so we did get some things that would go on a pizza. And we couldn't figure out how to grow pepperoni, though.
Oh.
And I'm sure the kids were so disappointed.
Yeah, well, that's a tough one. We can get that, too.
And cheese as well. That might be a little hard to...
Well, no, but yeah.
So did you have a cooking element to that as well?
No, we didn't in that case. But, you know, that would be a nice addition to it if you had more time. But it's always funding and getting the kids there and all that. Yeah.
So when you're planning your garden, and does it change a lot from year to year? So you had the kid element last year, but the food part of the garden, how do you decide what to plant? Is it?
Well, you know, there are certain crops that do really well in our area. And all the leafy greens.
Mm-hmm. Kale.
Brassicas, kales, you know. Kale is actually one of my favorites and is very popular now.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you need to grow the right plant for the right place. And so there are certain plants that do really well. We do dabble in things like tomatoes and peppers, and we even have grown some eggplant.
Yeah.
But you have to have special tricks and tips like cloches and hoophouses and...
Well, what I think is impressive, I mean, and I love the fact that you guys do try to emphasize what grows well here, and that's such a great demonstration to people about what can grow really well and the abundance of what will grow well here on the coast. And just tell people, I mean, so when people volunteer in the garden, they give a certain amount of time and then they get to take some of the food that's harvested home. But then you donate a tremendous amount of food.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
And tell us about the number you told us from last year was just staggering.
Yeah, it was over 2,500 pounds to the North Canada Food Bank. Yeah. And the previous year it was a similar amount. Before that it was at least 1,000 every year. So we've grown a lot. We, like I said, I now have 35 gardeners. So we have a really good base that allows us the manpower to do that. We also get generous donations from other places that... Nahalem Bay Garden Club gives us money to help fund our programs.
That's so awesome.
And yeah, so it works out really well.
That's so great.
Well, it's time to take a short station break. You are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, and streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us, we're talking with Karen Matthews of the Lower Nahalem Community Trust down in Nahalem between Manzanita and Wheeler.
Yeah, and we were also talking earlier, and you've mentioned it a couple of times now about being a master gardener, and I'm a master gardener too for Clatsop County, and I think we both had similar experiences of when we moved to the area going through the program to learn a little bit about what grows well here. And maybe tell us a little bit about your experience with master gardeners.
Yeah, well, I had had a beach house as a vacation home when I was still in the working world, and it was our little escape to come down to the coast, and it was lovely, and when we decided to move here full-time and retire, I had always wanted to take Master Gardener classes because I knew how to grow food in that climate more by experimentation and reading rather than any formal training. And I could never take the Master Gardener class because it was available only during the week work hours when I was at work. So it was something that I'd always wanted to do, is take the classes. And I thought, you know, what better way to go and meet people who have like interests. And it turned out really to be a great thing because I met some wonderful people. And one of my best friends took that classes that same year. So met people learned a lot about the program, learned about all the volunteer activities that were available. And mostly what I learned is how much I really don't know.
It's very humbling, actually. It is. It's very humbling.
Yeah, how much there is to learn. But I'm a resourceful person, and so, when you go and take any education, it teaches you how to think and how to go find the information rather than study and know everything. I mean, we can't all keep everything in our brains. So it was nice to know where the resources were. And then the volunteer activities. So my first volunteer activity straight out of Master Gardener program was at Cardam at the Recycle Center in Manzanita. And that was a fun project. I did that project for about 5 years, and it was taking an area that had been used as a, literally part of the dump, and it was a building materials refuge area where they had put a bunch of drywall and that sort of thing cast off. So that all, and then of course the blackberries grew up over that, and so that had to all be cleaned up. And then we put in an entry garden, and we utilized the resources of the school kids, the natural resource group through the Niikani School District, had them come up, and we built gardens out of all recyclable cast-off items.
Oh, that's so great.
Had a huge 10-foot diameter satellite dish that became a planter, a bathtub that we made into a pond, a bed, a garden bed, so an old iron bed that we put in framing around the base and made a raised bed out of that. So it was really fun. But the coolest thing that we used was for the paths, we used asphalt roofing tiles to keep the weeds down, because again, it had been a blackberry patch. And then on top of that, we used, what was cool was the pea gravel from the elementary school. They had just redone the elementary school playground. And so they brought that all over to Cardam thinking somebody could use it for something. Well, sure enough, we made it into the paths of the garden. And the kids got to put it there. And so it was like kind of a legacy from their grade school days. And
that's
now here
great.
They are, big seventh graders, putting in the playground rock. So that was fun.
That's so engaging. It seems so important to really connect people to gardening. And I know you talked, too, about the whole having to learn how to grow differently here at the coast. I think that's a lot of people struggle with that when they move here. We get a lot of people who didn't grow up here on the coast but are living here now. And we all bring with us such a legacy of how things happened wherever we moved from, even just moving from North Plains. And I think especially a challenge with food crops. You get so used to being able to grow certain things, and then out here it's so different. Have you really had to relearn?
Yeah. First year, put in corn, tomatoes, green peppers. Yeah, not so productive. but luckily, I do love salad. Salads, and greens grow so well here. All the leafy greens.
Yeah.
And there's just a tremendous amount. You think of lettuce. A lot of people just have iceberg lettuce or even maybe romaine. Mm-hmm. But there's so many different other kinds of lettuce that you can grow. And I love salads. So that works out well. Root vegetables do well here. All the brassicas, kale, cabbage does well.
This might be a good time to
Brussels
talk about
sprouts.
Recipes.
Oh, maybe.
I'm starting to get hungry.
Yeah. We talk about a recipe on this show. And do you have a favorite recipe you'd like to share?
Kale is really a very versatile vegetable, and
we
when I
kale,
yeah, when I first, well, it's so easy to grow, and there's a lot of different types.
Yeah,
I didn't realize there were so many types, but one of the first things that I ever learned to use kale in was in soups, and it does quite well there, obviously. But I have more recently come to appreciate it in slaws. So you can use it just like cabbage with different kinds of dressings, cutting it up, slicing it very, very thin, and removing the ribs, of course, is important. But then one of my favorite dressings is it's similar to a Caesar dressing, and it uses the shredded kale. I put in shredded red onion for some color.
Nice.
And then I dress it with a lemon juice, anchovy, garlic, and then an egg with in the blender with oil to emulsify it.
So it really is a Caesar.
It's a creamy Caesar base. And it's really wonderful. Now, people go, ooh, anchovies. I thought that, too, when I was first starting to cook. But if you're a cook,
in
you know what
dressing,
it does.
That's amazing.
You know what it does. You know,
it's
it adds
a,
that
it's
salty.
It's a savory. Yeah, total savory.
Yeah, oh, my mouth's watering.
I know.
But another good one for kale slaw is an Asian flavor where you use tahini sesame paste and soy. And mix that up and use that for the dressing. So it's
do you add anything
really
else into the kale? I mean, can you mix other shredded vegetables
in?
Yep. Just whatever is going.
Yeah, I wouldn't use any real soft, succulent lettuces, but any of the
something
other,
that's sturdy that can really hold up to it.
Yeah. Something that has like the texture of cabbage. In fact, you could use cabbage and kale together. Yeah.
That's one thing I like about those kale salads too, is that they hold for a few days. I mean, if you make a big batch, it's still going to be good 3 days later. Kind of all those flavors still soak in, and it's durable enough.
It doesn't break down.
Right. Isn't that nice?
And you know, for our busy lives and people who are still working, you don't have time to cook every day. Mm-hmm. So if you mixed up a batch and
just keep it in the fridge. It's interesting how many people, I know a lot of people still balk at the idea of eating raw kale, and yet coleslaw is something that's so dominant in our culture, and people aren't afraid of eating coleslaw, or some people might be, but you know, but that's something that we're very familiar with. But kale really, it's very similar usage, and I think a lot of things that we think of as like shredded cabbage, kale could step in just as well, and I think more beautiful in a lot of ways. And it's a more tender leafy green.
You can also use a couple different types of kale to mix that up. And you know, it's interesting you just said that, because I hadn't reflected on this before, Teresa. My husband eats cabbage in coleslaw, but he won't eat it cooked, and he'll eat kale salad, but he won't eat it cooked.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something?
Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, because I like stir fry. I do kale and stir fries a lot and that sort of thing.
But. Cooked greens, I think, have kind of a history for a lot of people. And I think, to me, I feel like I certainly grew up being fed greens cooked in ways that were kind of disgusting. I mean, it's like,
like boiled to death.
Yes, exactly. You know, and I hate to take, you know, my poor mom, she did not grow up learning to cook. Her mom was an awesome cook, but she did not pass that skill on to my mom. She was more one of those people that like just was kind of an impatient cook and didn't want to take the time to show in. And also my dad always used to say that when my parents got married, my mom could barely boil water. You know, and she never really liked it. And I grew up, you know, I was a child of the 70s. So it was a lot of packaged foods and, you know, frozen vegetables and, you know, things that were boiled to death. And so greens for me were just always something that I was like, oh, I'm not sure I like that, until I started to get into some of these fresh salads and just very lightly braised greens. And it's very transformative. I try to talk to people about, you know, trying it differently. Don't go on what maybe you've had in the past.
Yeah.
Really
try. Well, you know, it's interesting because it is all part of the education process. And that is one of the mantras that I have used. I really like the education element, and I'm building that more into the program. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of edible landscape coaching. I'm a garden coach, so...
Yeah. And so I know there's some programs coming up at the community garden or some other things.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what's coming up in this year.
Yeah, well, there's always lots of education programs, workshops, that sort of thing. We also have our annual plant sale on May 18th. It's a Saturday from 9 to noon. We do vegetable starts. We have a 70,000 square foot greenhouse.
It's
so
amazing.
Oh, wow.
It's
so we have
amazing.
Lots and lots of starts.
I'm just trying to even
it's amazing.
Imagine that.
Yeah, it's great. So we have a big plant sale, and we price our plants very reasonably because our whole point is to have sustainability and help other people do that. And so growing their own food and making it affordable for them. So we've got plants that are, you know, grown for our climate, and so that sale's coming up. And then in June we have a permaculture garden workshop.
Nice.
And that's at the end of June, so that will also come out in the press as far as dates.
And you have another hat you wear, right? You're on the city council.
I am, yes. So I'm on the city council of Wheeler, and we have all sorts of great things going on there. And
so are you managing to work gardens into your
city
council?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. You know, as the city council, I'm the liaison to the park. And so we have three parks in Wheeler, and I do work there every week. And I help teach people how to take care of ornamental beds. But my real passion is edible landscaping. And so I did a training session at the Tillamook Library last year, which was really fun. And I did a workshop, I think it was a 2 or 3 hour workshop on edible landscaping, and I share that information with neighbors and friends and the garden club. I'm a past president of the garden club. So
when you say edible landscaping, are you sort of advocating tearing up lawns and putting
in food?
No
lawn.
Yep.
I have no lawn. Yeah. No, mine's all. And any place that you can put a tree, you can put a fruiting tree or a shrub
can be a fruiting shrub, blueberry, or
gooseberry, or, you know, there's lots of shrubs that will give you food. And if you ever get a chance to come to Wheeler and visit my yard, you'll see how I've integrated that all throughout the planting. In fact, the neighbor kids love my yard because there's berries down the side of it.
So have you managed to have success with any fruit trees?
Yes. Columnar apples do really well. I have them on my patio in pots. Mm-hmm. Are very fun. We have Asian pears at the land trust that have done very well, and I have one in my yard also.
You actually have some amazing experimental trees at the land trust garden. Yeah. And that's kind of fascinating too. I think you just planted a bunch of different things to see how they would do, and it's been interesting results.
Yeah, we had a very generous donation by One Green World out in the Malala area, and they brought a bunch of different types of fruit that are from other parts of the world to plant. And so
we see
how they do. And some do well and some not as well. But it's been a really good experience to try to see what does well. And we're learning. And we even have citrus. We grow lemons and limes and grapefruit, but they're only golf ball size.
You know, it's over on Puget Island. I saw beautiful examples of that. You know, sometimes those little microclimates, it's funny that citrus could actually even exist here.
We have to put ours in the greenhouse
for part of the year.
Well, but still, just the fact that you can grow it, I think that's kind of amazing. I mean, again, it's like, it's just how much effort are you willing to put into it? It may not be easy to grow other things, but you can. And if you're willing to put in the effort, you really want to have some homegrown citrus, you know, you could.
Yep, and learn the tricks of the trade. You know,
absolutely.
Tomatoes are always people's favorite, right? And there are a lot of tricks that you can use. And one of the biggest tips is, don't try to grow anything with a later maturity date than 70 days.
Right. Yeah. Just not going to be a short season. And not growing super
large ones. Yeah.
They just aren't going to ripen out here.
Cherry tomatoes, and then the small saladettes or salad tomatoes are really the best. And, you know, there are heirlooms that are smaller and
there's some wonderful tasting tomatoes
but
out there.
Don't try to get the really long growing ones.
No. Those are heartbreakers. Yeah. They really are. So, Karen, tell us, for people who are interested in visiting the garden down in Nehalem, or contacting it in the programs you mentioned, the plant sale, is that available on the Lower Nehalem Community Trust website?
It is. It's on nehalemtrust.org.
Nehalemtrust.org. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a phone number there.
Yeah, there is.
Call.
The phone number for the trust office is 503-368-3203.
And that'll be out in the press, too, in the newspapers notices. So the plant sale is May 18th?
Yes, it's a Saturday.
And then you have a permaculture class on June...
No, I don't think I said
it's in
the actual
June.
Day. It's the last weekend of June.
Lots of great things coming up. And if you haven't been down to visit the Lower Nehalem Community Trust Garden, I really encourage it. It's very inspiring to see what can grow here on the North Coast. It's amazing.
So we are at the end of our show. Oh. Thank you so much for joining us on today's Food Talk, fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast.
Thank you so much to Mark Albrecht, our engineer, and to Luke and Katie for our theme song. We have a couple of announcements coming up. Wanted to remind you that coming up on April 20th, there are two Meet Your Farmer events. One is in Cannon Beach, and one is in Grays River, Washington, at the Grays River Grange. The Cannon Beach one is at the Cannon Beach Community Center. Both of those events are from 2 to 4, and it's a chance for you to get out and meet the people who are growing your food and find out how to buy it from them. So Meet Your Farmer, if you need more information about that, you can call North Coast Food Web at 503-325-8573.
Sounds good. And this show will be available as a podcast at coastradio.org. Thank you so much, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.